Look, I think people really like trolleys. They're cute, they roll, and they smell a little bit like Seattle Spirit. I think people like trolleys.
This city is under a lot of duress right now. If there were easy solutions, Seattle probably would not have elected a woman mayor. Seattle's a hard place to live.
We can't act, and we should act.
Yeah, you are acting, Jelly Durka. Your whole bit is an act, let's be honest. You act
sincere? This city is under a lot of duress.
You act smart?
I've looked at the data, and the data is strong data. The data says we have data, and we're looking into the data.
And you acted like a leader.
That was not an easy job, or they wouldn't have hired a woman to do it.
Human costs. Unforeseeable circumstances. Unforeseeable. You choose to build the toy. A toy trolley car. Choo-choo! Got a note the other day. There was a dad driving around in the car when I did that, and his three-year-old boy started to do choo-choo with me. Choo-choo! So you build a stupid toy instead of a transportation conveyance, the trolley. Slower than walking, even uphill, kills a woman after its first couple weeks in operation, breaks a police officer's femur a couple weeks after that. Then it itself is broken for most of its lifespan. Then they hire, then they buy 10 new trolley cars for a total of $52 million. Apparently they don't fit on the rails. And Jenny Durkin's still saying, we have to study the data to see if we can continue to have the very best deadly trolley car that kills young women on their bikes on the entire West Coast. This city is under a lot of duress. You know who's under duress, Jelly Durka? Given your lack of leadership,
Durka.
The business owners in Pioneer Square. Many of them have seen a 12% decrease in business while this ridiculous project of this trolley car has been taking up the streets and making it impossible for people to go down there. King Five's Chris Daniels spoke with Mike Klotz. He's the owner of Delicatus near the corner of First and Yesler.
There's an element of construction fatigue down here.
Mike Klotz is the owner of Delicatus, a normally vibrant cornucopia of culinary delights. Has been burdened with a dusty view.
I mean, we're down. We're down for the year, about 12%.
He says tables have emptied since the Center City streetcar plan got underway. It was enough to force one of his neighbors out of business. Crews have been laying the groundwork for the project, putting down utility lines, even though the connector is on hold amid suggestions it is tens of millions over budget.
Even though it's on hold,
this city is under a lot of duress.
You are the duress. You and your policies are the duress.
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
It's a hard place to live.
Well, at least you're living, Jelly. The fact is, the couple who were attacked by a woman that they decided to bring into their home. We talked about this the first hour because I was mentioning the fact that I think you guys deserve a reward for stopping what was shaping up to be a media cover-up. The media had initially reported, the Seattle Times, that this woman in Bellevue, this couple had taken in, was homeless. They took her off the street. Then they disappeared that phrase. And all day Sunday, Q13, Como, were all saying, a house guest decided to stab the people she was living with and then decided to set fire to the house. Now, the judge who's hearing the bail hearing for this woman, who was apparently a street person or homeless, I don't know which. I don't know if she's recently homeless or a professional street person. She sounds mentally ill to me. Her name is Crescencia Everett. She has a $400,000 bail, and the judge said this could have potentially been a homicide.
We're seeking bail in the amount of $400,000, and that's based primarily on the danger that the defendant presents to the community based on the allegations contained in the super form. While at this point they are only allegations, they are extremely concerning. The amount of aggression and violence that had to be used in this case to result in the lacerations on Carolyn Hall's neck, her face, both her hands, lacerations to her chest. She was clearly in distress when she sought help from a neighbor and was worried that her husband might even be dead. And he suffered a significant puncture wound to his right collarbone area, significant laceration to his neck, laceration to his face, laceration to both hands. And as the superform indicates, they do need surgery in order to address these injuries.
76 and I believe 83 years of age. With dear kind hearts, and they saw a woman hurting and decided to bring her in their home. And they, in my judgment, and God bless them, God help them, maybe they bought the lie. Maybe they bought the lie that people like Jelly, Durka, and Mike O'Brien,
the city, we have no plan,
propel, that they're all just normal people who had a bad break. It's not true. It's not. The majority of the people on our streets right now are drug-addled, and many of them are mentally ill. And you're not going to convince me this lady was not mentally ill. So the unintended consequences of pandering from people like this wet noodle of an impotent man, and by the way, a corrupt man, heroin Dan Satterberg.
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
A reminder that professional Republicans would have, had he not just switched parties after the filing date so people couldn't run him against him as a Republican, had he not switched parties, the sickness of anything for the letter R would have the Republican Party spending money to get that feeble-headed corruptocrat reelected. All sorts of unintended consequences all around their area. As Sideshow Bob, our part-time attorney general, full-time seeker of gubernatorial campaign donations, fires up his lawsuit machine, walks over and looks at himself in the mirror. Bob looking at himself.
Shirt, so sexy.
See, we have the "We'll Sue You" theme for Bob. This is Bob's theme for Bob.
Yeah. Hurts, and I am too sexy for.
So he is going to go out, fire up the fundraising machine to sue over 3D printed guns. The unintended consequences of that? You can't do your ordinary job. The unintended consequences of that, Sideshow? You are living proof that there is no reason to think we have an actual attorney general. The consequences of that, Bob, is a low-trust society. Bob, I know you lied when you said the 405 toll lanes are legal because you said the word "and" means "or" and it doesn't. I know you lied. I know you looked the other way. 250 million gallons of raw sewage in Puget Sound, you would have sued a private company. Bob, I know you're not the attorney general. So, Bob, I look at your decisions as the decision of a politician. Worse, as an agitator. Bob, the unintended consequences you're incurring are encouraging people to not follow the law. Because you clearly don't give a flat damn about the law, Bob. You care about getting into the governor's office. But you go around all day long saying that the law matters, Bob. Won't you? Got to uphold that constitution and the law.
The law matters.
Right. Now, this over the weekend, unintended consequence of creating great heroes out of political agitators. There's been some great heroic political actors in our lifetime. There's been great heroic activists in our lifetime. And in fact, outside of our lifetime. But making stars of people who agitate ends up inviting different forms of human beings to agitate. There are credible and unbelievably disturbing rape charges. Taking women captive, tying them up, drugging them, raping them on film. About a guy named Red Wolf Pope. Famous. Gave a TEDx speech here because he went to the to protest the pipelines. He's a Seattle native. He's an activist here. Vanessa Miscagra.
The documents say that in June, two people staying at Pope's Santa Fe apartment found pictures and videos of who they identified as Red Wolf Pope having sex with unconscious women. The two say the videos and pictures look like they had been taken at his Santa Fe and Seattle apartments. One of the women identified in the video came forward to Seattle police saying she believed she was drugged and then raped by Pope. It also says a search turned up hidden cameras in the bathrooms and bedrooms of those apartments as well.
When you create these columns, on these stages on which people can stand, and you make the pursuit of being an agitator, the pursuit of becoming famous, you'll invite some terrible personalities into this. And this guy's presumed innocent until proven guilty. But the evidence on this, the unintended consequence of making stars of people who agitate, right there in front of us. Todd Emmer Show will continue on AM 770 KTTH. If you are really sick of Twitter and Facebook playing games, it's their platforms. We can't go police it. We don't get to shut it down. It's not our role. It's not a First Amendment issue, but it is a Federal Election Commission issue. This is interesting. A couple of GOP reps think they've found a way to rein in Twitter for shadow banning Republicans. We'll explain it when we come back on the Todd Herman Show. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show. Wow, with thanks to Christopher and morning show host Jason Rance. I owe an apology to one Seattle trolley. We've got so many stupid trolleys around here. I guess I got confused. The trolley that broke the leg of an officer was a stupid car made up to look like a trolley. Jason says he was there and heard the crack of the officer's bone, said it was loud. So it wasn't the streetcar trolley. It was the cheap look-alike idiotic trolley. Either way, it was a trolley. So I regret the error. Thank you very much, Jason and Chris, for pointing that out. I do like it when the audience catches me in that, because I like to be able to say, as David Lee Roth says,
no, I ain't lying to you. I'm only going to tell you one time.
Right. Because I always want to do it once. David Lee, he's the model for all talk radio. So you know Matt Gaetz or Gates? He is a conservative representative in Congress. He and Jim Jordan and some others have been shown to have been shadow banned. Let me explain what Twitter is doing and what they say they're doing, okay? Shadow banning means that if you don't use Twitter, what you do is you sign up to follow me, Todd Herman, okay? At Toddy Herman or Jason Rance, at Jason Rance with a Z. Once you do that, the way Twitter is supposed to work is when I say something on Twitter, it appears in your feed. Okay, so it's the idea is you can follow a whole bunch of people at once without having to go to a bunch of websites. So instead of having to come to my website and then go to Jason's website, you're at one place and the information comes to you. So it's push versus pull. So it's pushed to you. Shadow banning, what Twitter does is that they make you have to go to my website. So you have to go to my Twitter page to see what I'm saying. That's not the way Twitter's designed. Nobody goes to anybody's Twitter page. This would be a lot like the city of Seattle saying, oh, sure, you can still buy soda, but you have to walk to Pasco. You can't drive, you can't fly, you have to walk. No one's going to walk to Pasco to buy a soda pop. No one in Twitter is going to go to everybody's Twitter page to go see what they're saying. Furthermore, as Vice News showed, and Vice News is liberal, what they showed is that Twitter is in fact hiding these conservatives in search. So if you go to Twitter to search for Matt Gaetz or Jim Jordan or Mark Meadows, they don't show up in search. Okay, so you want to see what they're saying. Maybe you want to follow them, can't find them. Furthermore, if you start to type a name, let's say you type at Todd E on Twitter, you might see my name come up. It might be one of the autofills. I don't know if it is or not. I don't really care about Twitter, but there are people who do. So you might see my name come up as an autofill. Twitter disabled that for the Republicans. None of this happened to the Democrats. None of it. Now, that is Twitter's property. It is their platform. They can do with it as they wish. This is not a First Amendment issue. The government censoring our speech is a First Amendment issue. Twitter censoring our speech is Twitter deciding what they want on their platform. Until this came about. Okay, I'll get to that in a second. Matt Gaetz says, look, it's not coincidental that all three of us, that this is happening to conservatives and it's not happening to Democrats.
I'm certain that there were only four members of Congress who had their voices suppressed on Twitter. Matt Gaetz, Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, and Devin Nunes. So that'd be one hell of a coincidence.
So here's what Twitter says. Oh, we're not shadow banning. This would be like Seattle City Council saying, oh, we're not saying you can't drink soda pop here. You can't buy it here.
And in order to drink it here, you have to walk on your feet to Pasco and then carry it back. But, oh no, we haven't banned soda drinking in Seattle by any stretch of the imagination. That's what Twitter's saying. So, what do we do? Now, people have been flummoxed for years, but this is absolutely spot on. Matt Gaetz has decided to file a Federal Elections Commission complaint, and this comes from TheBlaze.com. So Gaetz has said, look, you are hiding our speech. You're not hiding Democrat speech. You're a platform, okay? I've signed up to use your platform. The Democrats have signed up to use your platform. We're both using it within the rules. You are hiding my words from your audience. You are not hiding the words of the Democrats from your audience. His point is this would be a lot like a billboard company who is taking money from both parties, but hiding one billboard where it will never be seen. Oh, sure. Sure, Matt, we ran your billboard. Now, it was placed behind a hotel and next door to a sewage facility, so no one ever saw it, but we ran your billboard. Sure. Or just refusing to run it. So the complaint to the Federal Elections Commission is about treating this as an advertising or as a political advertising methodology. Now, the one hole in that is that Gaetz is not paying to run on Twitter. That's one hole on it. But it's a platform. And the platform is open to all comers. Now, what Twitter continues to say and continues to add nonsense upon nonsense upon nonsense is some of this is algorithmic. Okay? So here's what they mean. If you are following people Twitter says are not helpful to the conversation or are harming the conversation, and you're interacting with those people, people that they might contend are trolls, that's a point against you. If you are interacting in such a way on Twitter that Twitter has determined you're not being helpful to healthy conversation, that's a point against you. Lastly, the point against you is how do people respond to you? Do a lot of people block you or mute you? Here's where this gets into problems. The left, A, has organized muting and blocking crews. They will, in fact, they used to set traps for conservatives. And I used to teach people about this because people would get openly banned from Twitter. The left would set traps. They would start an argument with you, and then they would add someone that you had not, that you didn't follow, they didn't follow you. The second you started tweeting at that person, it was Twitter spam. So they would get people blocked that way. There's organized groups on the left. You know what else they do? They mark GOP emails as spam. We know this because we studied it. Enough people mark emails as spam, it never gets seen. On Twitter, they have organized groups that go and block and shut down and complain and try to get people blocked. The right just, we just don't do this. It's just not in us to go out and act this way. Lastly, and this is now proven through rounds and rounds and rounds of studies, people who are left-leaners are much more likely to instantly block people they see on platforms such as Twitter or Facebook who are, against their political position. Boom, you're a righty, I'm going to block you. All of this has created this circumstance where Matt Gaetz now has filed, and maybe he'll withdraw it because Twitter has withdrawn the shadow banning of he and Meadows and Jordan. Maybe they'll withdraw it, but the Federal Election Commission complaint, that was a really, really, really smart play. When we continue on the Todd Herman Show, the topic, we're all so excited about Russia. But there is an important piece to this. Over the weekend, a guy I knew, I sold one of my companies to him years ago. He is a Clintonista's Clintonista. He helped run Hillary's campaign. He was her pollster. Here's what he has to say about the FBI and the probe. We'll get to that. Plus, what did the FBI not tell the FISA court? This matters. So Mark Penn is a guy who doesn't need to be on TV. Mark Penn is a guy who doesn't need any money. Mark Penn sold his company for a lot of money. He makes a lot of money polling. He went to Microsoft for a while, and I happen to know Mark made a lot of money there. Mark is a guy who doesn't need to go out and try to turn the corner and be Mr. Hey, I no longer like the Clintons. He still likes the Clintons. And Mark is a weird dude. I'll just say that out front. So Mark Penn used to run Hillary's polling. He was big time into the Clintons.
So I heard he was now looking into the FBI indictment or the FBI warrant, that he was reading the FISA warrant. And I figured I'd get classic Mark Penn, right? But no. Penn says this about the FISA warrant.
Well, I think people just use talking points that they had before you could actually read the warrant. I think any fair-minded person who reads this warrant comes away with the conclusion that there was no probable cause.
See, this is fascinating from the perspective of the FBI. What were they seeking? Wasn't it supposed to be collusion? Wasn't it collusion between Trump and Russia? We know that, right? But what was the actual probable cause? Now, I hadn't thought of that, I'm embarrassed to say, nor had any other thinkers thought of that. So maybe Penn is seeing something that maybe other people say, oh, no, I can see some probable cause. Except when I read the document, the FISA warrant, I see so much reliance on the Fusion 360 and Christopher Steele. And then I get to the second step. Okay, so they've relied on that. How did they characterize this? How did they characterize Christopher Steele to the FBI? Well, what they didn't do when they went about this FISA warrant, they did not disclose that Christopher Steele had it in for Trump. They did not disclose that he was working with Glenn Simpson from Fusion GPS. They did not disclose that both of those parties were political operatives. They did not disclose that both of those parties worked in opposition research as political operatives. They described them as someone who might. The FBI speculates that unidentified U.S. person was likely looking for some information that could be used to discredit candidate number one's campaign. That person is Glenn Simpson. Okay. Identified U.S. person is Glenn Simpson. Likely looking for things that could be used to discredit Trump. It's not likely. The FBI knew it was not likely. The FBI knew the source of this. The FBI knew who was paying Simpson. The FBI knew who was laundering the money for Simpson. In my judgment, that's Perkins Coie, right? The law firm that, in my judgment, is nothing more than a money laundering machine now. So that's how they characterized Simpson. How they characterized Steele, Christopher Steele, who I remind you, had been fired, well, not fired because he was a contractor, but had been not permitted to do business any longer with the FBI because of ethical problems. Ethics in the way he treated the press, in the way he interacted with reporters. He was no longer working on FBI projects because of that. He was hired by Fusion GPS. Here's how the FISA court had Steele explained to them. Source number one. Source number one's reporting has been corroborated and used in criminal proceedings. And the FBI assesses source number one to be reliable. Source number one has been compensated, redacted, by the FBI and is unaware of any derogatory information pertaining to source number one. They were not unaware of derogatory information pertaining to Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele no longer could do business with the FBI. He was doing business here with Fusion GPS. Furthermore, when he says that the source number one's reporting has herein been credible, the FBI is not disclosing the fact that they were unable to verify many of the things in these reports. Further, they wrote, and this is from Powerline blog Paul Mirignoff. If you're not following these two blogs, Powerline blog and Legal Insurrection, please make sure you remedy that. They never advised, this is them writing to the court, asserting that Glenn Simpson, quote, never advised source number one, that Steele, as to the motivation behind the research and the candidate number one's ties to Russia. Here's what they're saying. When Fusion GPS hired Christopher Steele, they didn't go to Christopher Steele and say, dig up dirt on Donald Trump. That's what the FBI would have us believe. A, utter nonsense. Pile of garbage. I cannot tell you how untrue that is. No one should believe that. Secondly, let's pretend that there is a parallel universe to ours, and there was a warp in the time continuum, and for a second they were living in this parallel universe, and in fact, Glenn Simpson didn't say to Christopher Steele, we need to take down Trump. Let's pretend that's the case. Do you think a guy like Christopher Steele, who has been a political operative all these years, a former spy, who now digs up opposition research for people, doesn't know what he's being asked to do? We need you to look into Trump. Oh, to find great things about him? No. There is no, we need you to look into this person to find great things about them. That's done by the campaign. You're a hired hit, right? You are a hired hitman reputationally. That's what you do. You take people out with the black arts. That's what you do. Black ops. Okay? So he knows his role in the universe. Now, let's go a little further down this line of fantasy. Let's say that Christopher Steele, that day, he'd been to Seattle and stepped on a heroin needle, so he was stoned. He was walking through Pioneer Square, stepped on a needle, and he was stoned. So he didn't get it. Oh, I guess I'm looking for good things on Trump. Even if that's the case, you can't escape the fact that Christopher Steele himself had said, I am desperate to see that Donald Trump is not president. Who knew about that? Bruce Orr. Who works where? The FBI. Where did Bruce Orr's wife work? Fusion GPS. All of these things add up to the FBI being desperate to not have the FISA court have the full story on all of this. When you don't want someone to have the full story, think of the times in your life where you've attempted to hide the full story. Probably few and far between, because you're probably an honest person. Maybe an officer, when your young guy pulls you over. You have any beer to drink? Honestly, you've been drinking whiskey. Nope. You know how to do this in a job interview, and you're thinking in your mind, I could do that. I could learn to do that. So you say, yep. White lie. But when an organization like the FBI goes to these lengths to obscure and hide and color and spin to a court of law, and in fact, a secret court where you want the truth most pristine because it involves spying on Americans, spying on a presidential candidate's campaign. You have to go full force in truth. And they did not.
Down on Main Street. Down on Main Street.
Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. And, of course, really appreciate you listening on the podcast. I appreciate you listening at all. It's just podcasting is it's a way to vote for conservative media in a digital media environment. And it matters, really, because as radio changes and consumption habits change, it's so important that conservative media take a toe hold and a finger hold and an arm hold and a tooth hold on digital. If you don't yet have the podcast, it's great. You can listen to the shows on your time frame. You can listen to them through Bluetooth in your car and all of the shows. You want the podcast? Here's an easy way to get it. Text the word podcast to 800-465-8770. We'll send you a link to my podcast and to Jason Rantz as well. Hey, and a personal note tonight, one of my major failings in life is that I'm really good at starting and finishing novels. I mean, really good. When we were flying back from the East Coast, I asked my daughter to read some of my work. And man, it was fun to watch her laugh at some of the things I'd written. And because it was meant to be funny, not that she was deriding it. And for her to sort of get into some of the characters I'd written and in fact start to ask me questions about the story. I mean, this is a young, you know, teenage girl, and other people like this writing as well. I can't seem to finish the writing. I can do the beginning. I can do the end. I can't do the middle. One of my projects I worked on, was a character who was kind of a little bit inspired by my grandpa. And it was this thing that my grandpa noticed about words. My grandpa was a sales guy. Okay. He loved his life. He was a guy who never graduated. I think he graduated seventh grade, if that's even right. Now I forget. I think it was seventh grade. And he was an incredible success in his life. Left school, went to go work at Gray Bar Electric. And I think he started there in the stock room, eventually became one of their best salespeople. He got eventually the gold watch, literally. In fact, when I was in New York City, when I made my first ever trip to New York City, you know what I did? I went to the Gray Bar offices, and my grandpa had these stickers made that had his name on it and his nickname that he would leave him with customers so that they would know who to order from. He put them on the bottom of the product boxes. So when you ran out of this or that equipment or supply, there was Grandpa's name and phone number right at the bottom of the box. And we used to joke about these stickers because we'd find them on everything. I took one of those stickers and I went into the Gray Bar offices. I found the pictures of the CEOs. I found the founder of Gray Bar Electric. And I took one of those stickers and I put it up under the picture frame. So I didn't vandalize the picture frame. It may still be there. I don't think anyone's ever noticed it. And then on one of the really early versions of a camera on a quote smartphone back in the day or a cell phone, really early versions of it, I took a picture of where it was and then a picture from underneath so Grandpa could see it. He was just thrilled. So my grandpa was a man of words, never at a loss for a story or a greeting. His sort of exercise, when he was told he had to exercise later in life, you got to exercise. He would walk the neighborhood. But my grandma, she could walk the same path as my grandpa, but she could walk it in 20 minutes. My grandpa would take 2 hours. Now, he wasn't a slow walker. Actually, he was a great walker, but he'd stop at every yard. Every yard had a story. Everybody had a smile, something that Grandpa wanted to say to everybody. But there's something he never, ever said to me. And you know what it is. He was a man of that generation. My grandpa never said, I love you. He didn't say it for the longest time. And he had said something to me one time that made this piece of fiction I was working on sort of create this aspect to this character. He'd said that when you say those words too much, they stop meaning anything. And I said, so like inflation, like words can suffer inflation. He said, yes. When it becomes just a habit to say it, it can become like inflation. Now, my wife and I, we make a habit of telling each other we love each other. When we leave the house, it's still very meaningful to me. It is because I've experienced people who have left and not come back. It's meaningful to me to say it to my daughter every chance I get, but I'm a different human being than my grandpa. There is something, though, to this holding it back. There is. When I was in my early 20s, I had made a fairly dreadful series of decisions that culminated in me having to ask for help from the family. Not really financial help, but just to be kind of bailed out in terms of support. Not financial support. That was not what I needed. But in a specific form of support. So I had to call the family. And I'd called my aunts and uncles, and everybody was very, very kind. And I just put off calling my grandpa. So there I was in San Francisco. I was in my little apartment. I knew my grandpa and grandma, they went to bed late. And my mom called me. She said, look, grandpa and grandma, I know you've been calling everybody else. Okay, they're not stupid people. They might be old, but they're certainly not dumb. They know you've called aunts and uncles and cousins. And so they expect the phone to ring. So you should probably call them. Then my dad called. Are you going to call my dad? So I picked up the phone and I called that number that I'd had memorized because I used to go watch their shows with them. Yeah. When I lived in Spokane, I used to go watch their soap opera with them. 2 to 3 p.m. General Hospital on Q6, I believe. My grandpa picked up the phone. My grandma got on the other line and I told him what had been going on. I told him the sort of support and help that I needed. And I told him how hard it was for me to make the phone call. Now that man
That man of words. That man of words who had never said these words to me before. He said it this way. He said, "Well, Tato, I'll tell you this. From the day we're born till we ride in the hearse, things aren't so bad. They can always get worse." And he chuckled and he said, "And I guess we love you, Tato." Grandma said, "Of course we do. Of course we do." Now you see how much more meaningful that was? I will continue to tell my wife I love her when I leave the house. I'll continue to be verbose about it with my daughter because it's who I am. I just hope they know I mean it every time I say it. I'll tell you, I can still smell my apartment in San Francisco. I can still visualize the stupid phone I have, one of those transparent phones you can see the wires inside. And I can still see my grandpa's face in my mind's eye as he said it. I can still see my grandma and her long earrings as she said, "Of course we do." People are different, and sometimes words do undergo a form of inflation. This is the Todd Herman Show. We air every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Be well, be strong, and be kind.